Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducross.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to the Sports Warriors on Blog Talk Radio. We are your hosts for this evening. My name is Tristan Ducross, and along my side, as always, is my partner in crime, Sean Ducross. Tristan, the head kicker heard around the world, has changed the landscape of MMA. And Sean, it was just in 5 minutes and 59 seconds, that's all it took.
Tristan, which is more time than the fans have to say in their when it comes to staying in their seat at the Ronda Rousey fight.
Sean, UFC 193 will forever be known as a day that, well, the course of MMA has simply changed. And we will also be joined later on, right after this segment, with Chris Cope, former UFC fighter. He took the time to sit down and talk with your boys. But, Sean, this has literally changed the whole entire perspective of women's MMA in just a blink of an eye.
It is, and it raised to one of the biggest questions that I've asked in quite some time, since probably about 2009, which is simply, who created women's MMA? What is Ronda Rousey to women's MMA? And really, quite frankly, Ronda Rousey, yeah, I'll give you credit. She's a trailblazer. She's a trendsetter. She kept women's MMA on the forefront with the UFC, but to give her all the credit in the world for women's MMA, to me, is a little ridiculous because of a woman named Gina Carano. Everybody talks about, oh, stop dissing Ronda Rousey. Stop doing this. Stop doing that. Stop disrespecting her. Well, what about Gina Carano? You're disrespecting her by not making her name known and giving her respect that she deserves for what she accomplished back in 2009 when women's MMA was non-existent.
And don't forget, too, is that she was the first female MMA fighter to main event an MMA fight. Let's not forget that, okay? It's funny how everybody's quick to point and see how great Ronda Rousey is, how she's changed the course of MMA. Well, in just a blink of an eye, all that was taken away from her by Holly Holm. And we said it on our show over and over again that we looked at Holly Holm as the potential fighter that could simply take that title off of her. And one reason why we thought that was because when you break down, look on the tape, don't just sit there and say how good she is. Actually physically watch fights and break them down. Ronda Rousey, I've said it before, to me, she comes off like a one-dimensional fighter. Her striking isn't where it should be, and yet she's supposedly have learned from Mike Tyson. But to what point does Ronda Rousey start getting her backing behind her in terms of her striking? Because she has judo. That's about it. Get her opponents on the ground and that's all fine and dandy. But the reality is that as you get better, you're no longer fed opponents. You're not. Sean mentioned Gina Carano. Gina Carano didn't duck anybody. People were being thrown in there, and it happened. Gina Carano took on Chris Cyborg and got destroyed. Went into Hollywood. Ronda Rousey took on Holly Holm, and Holly Holm cyborged Ronda Rousey. Does she go into Hollywood? In order to become a good fighter, you have to evolve and change and adapt. Ronda Rousey has done none of that.
I don't think you can say that she hasn't done any of that when she has seen some strides of changing with the time. Because she went from being this woman that tried to go into the octagon and take down woman after woman after woman and submit a via armbar to becoming the woman that she was, and that is the person that could knock out the Beth Correas. The ones that could weather the storm from a Kat Zingano, the ones that can weather the storm from a Misha Tate. Ultimately, the downfall, though, came at the hands of a pretty. And when you look at that, that's what you have to deal with.
See, Sean, you mentioned Holly Holm's striking ability. And it's funny because people started talking about Holly Holm in the same kind of category as Floyd Mayweather. And I keep looking at that, and I keep seeing that train of thought about her and Floyd. And it leaves me dumbfounded how you can compare the two, because unlike Floyd Mayweather, she's a 15-time world champ. Holly Holm's striking prowess is a lot better than pretty much anybody in the division right now. Is there somebody right now that could take that title off of her right now? That's going to be debated. Whether or not Ronda Rousey gets another shot, that's debatable. Because we know she says she'll be back, but we don't know 100% without a shadow of a doubt that it will be back in the near future. Despite her saying that she'll be back. Rumors say UFC 2000 shall avenge her loss.
200,
right, sorry.
But to say that you don't know if she's going to get another shot, she is going to get another shot if she comes back.
That's a question.
If. Correct, and that's the only question. It's not whether if she's going to get another title shot, it's when she's going to get another title shot. The biggest if is just a simple fact. Did she get cyborged by Holly Holm? Is she done? You saw the TMZ footage. You saw everything. She's refusing to show her face. Now, here's the question I have. Is that when you look at it and you watch that video, is there more structural damage done to her face, like the fake articles that were out there about a broken jaw? Because the only legit report was that she had a busted lip that needed surgery, and then on top of that needed plastic surgery. But it remains to be seen, is there more structural damage done to her face that not many people do know about?
I don't know, because you look at it, Sean, every girl that's in MMA, the pretty faces, they don't get hit in the face a lot. Let's be real. They don't. You have Lingerie Fighting League out there that doesn't allow girls to get hit in the face for a reason. Okay? The way I see this about Ronda Rousey hiding her face is because we've always said it. She hates getting hit in the face. So when you get your mouth split open and her lip looks like Predator from the movie, what do you think she would do? Hide her face. Doesn't want to talk to anybody. I would tend to believe Dana White, that Dana White says that there's no broken bones in the face. All the news outlets and the media that has been reporting that she has a busted jaw. Is it real? Is it not real? Hey, everybody's going to have their opinion on this. I mean, for crying out loud, Taz of all people, says that it was a fixed fight. Like, but what do you expect from a wrestler? Like, dude, if you don't watch MMA or combat sports in general, why are you popping off at the mouth?
Because I think he still watches it. I think he understands mixed martial arts. From my knowledge, he has a background in mixed martial arts.
Okay, but so, to what extent, Sean, is it enough that every single time your golden girl or your pretty boy or your main star loses and you're literally grasping at straws and the first word out of people's mouths,
it's fixed.
Like, how is that good for the legitimacy of the sport?
And that's interesting. I mean, we talked to Chris Cope about that as well later on. But when you look at it, is that what do you expect when you're watching a combat sports or anything into that nature? Because either way, there has to be storylines. There has to be something that piques the attention of the people that are tuning in, good, bad, or indifferent. The bottom line is something has to be there to draw them in, fixed or not fixed. If this was a fixed fight, then Ronda Rousey's picking up wrestling-style promos and understanding how to absorb a shot or put herself in a situation that it doesn't look like it's a fixed fight. To me, that's asking for a lot for one individual to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to put myself in harm's way. You got kicked upside the head. Who in what frame of mind wants to get knocked out that bad? That's the question I have. Is that if you're standing there in an octagon, one-on-one, with a combatant, why would you want to get your head kicked off? Why would you want to put yourself in that much jeopardy? I could get it if you go in there and you get knocked out. Okay, I put myself in harm's way. Go ahead. Hit me right here on my chin. We've seen that all the time. You see that every day in real life, is that when you get into a fight outside, then you go, come on, hit me. Hit me right here. And people know that gesture that I'm doing. Is that hit me right here on the chin. Every time somebody wants to fight some individual on the outside in a street fight, they always do that attack. That's more easy to believe than Ronda Rousey saying, go ahead, kick me outside the head. You know how vicious that was? She went down like a sack of potatoes. So no, I don't think it was fixed. Anybody that says it's fixed is ridiculous. First it was Kid Shamrock versus Kimbo Slice, it was fixed.
The Tito Ortiz and Stefan Bonner was staged. Like, at what point do you just eventually throw that away? Because this is as bad as the steroids phenomenon. Every single time somebody's talking about, oh, you're going to lose. Oh, it must be fixed. But the way I look at this too, Sean, is that here's another situation that I have about this. And then we'll get going about the rest of the card and what we thought about that. But here's another situation that I have. Is that Ronda Rousey, being the type of person she is, right? Holly Holm being the type of person she is. Again, you'll hear it from Chris Cope. And I want to touch on it real quick. Is that this is not good for the UFC. Who's been single-handedly carrying the UFC for the last year? Ronda Rousey. Because how many times have we said over and over again is that they put on way too many fights, way too many fight cards. We said it last week when Bellator beat UFC Fight Night 77. We said it then. It's because they're putting way too much emphasis on how many fights can we do in a single year. But you have nobody right now that could sell a pay-per-view or sell a card like Ronda Rousey or Conor McGregor. Because all they have to do is show up and talk, and that sells the card. Right. So what happens? You already have one champ cleared out. Jose Aldo and Conor McGregor are happening. Unless Jose Aldo decides he's not going to show up. What happens then if Jose Aldo goes in there and beats up Conor McGregor and takes that title? Then what does the UFC do? They're already grasping at straws. They're already trying to dig themselves out of a hole financially. So what do you do as a company? Where do you go from here? Look at your champions, okay? You have, what is it, Fabricio Werdum as the heavyweight champ? He don't talk. Doesn't sell anything. Nobody cares. Chris Weidman. He's getting there. Just not quite. But he doesn't talk. He doesn't talk. Luke Rockhold talks. Luke Rockhold has been on TV as a womanizer.
Luke Rockhold, your point is what on that, Tristan? That's the most random thought ever. But Luke Rockhold is the one that's talking up this Chris Weidman fight. He's been talking it up for 2 years.
Right. So he can build it. Not Chris Weidman. Who's going to build up the flyweight division? Demetrius Johnson? He doesn't talk. So how do you build a sport around people that can't sell or make money? That's the issue they're going to run into. The minute that these guys start falling off the wagon, you're in deep trouble, Sean. It's all about money. UFC 200 is vastly approaching. And that's the opening of the UFC, well, I'm just going to call it the UFC stadium because it's Las Vegas. So let's just stop being around the bush. You know you're going to call it the UFC stadium. But at what point do we start seeing something either a rebranding, a remodel, or a restructure of something to get these guys going in the right direction. Because you took away their identity of who they are when you stripped them of their individuality with the promotion, with the outside advertisement. You took that away from them. You put them underneath your banner, your Reebok deal, and yet you expect the unexpected. I don't know. I don't know to what extent do we start seeing the UFC saying we got to do something. We got to drum up something. Because while you love Holly Holm and you love what she did and you love the fact that the title's around her, she's humble. That kneel down over near Ronda Rousey, nothing but respect. I get it. But that's fine. In the octagon, after you win, you show your gratitude towards your champ. But you got to try to self-promote, talk yourself up. Why should people buy the fight to see you?
Exactly, and that's the whole point, is that how is Holly Holm supposed to sell the fight? She didn't sell this fight. She didn't come close to selling this fight.
Rousey did, but then you know what that did? That took her completely out of her game.
No, it didn't. Not even close, because Ronda Rousey, that's the thing I don't get. Everybody's like, oh, she was emotional. That's why she ended up getting out of her game plan. That's a farce. I saw nothing different than what she did in that stare down than she's done in the previous 5 stare downs. You can go back and watch tape. It's the same Ronda.
Well, Beth Correa was all in her face, and Ronda Rousey wasn't, just staring at her.
They were in each other's face. Beth Correa a little bit more so than Ronda Rousey, sure. But the bottom line is, Ronda Rousey gets in everybody's face. Ronda Rousey talks mad junk on every single woman she's ever come across to. Holly Holm was the only individual she did not do that to. So at the end of the day, it was still the same Ronda Rousey. Why? Because a calm, cool, collected woman fighter actually had the guts to stand up to you? You think that went, whoa, that's wrong? No. Same Ronda Rousey, same thing. She did what she needed to do to sell that fight. Holly Holm did nothing to sell that fight. What is Holly Holm going to do if she takes on a Misha Tate? How are you supposed to sell a fight without having the ability to self-promote?
Right. What about a Kat Zingano?
I feel bad for Holly Holm right now because she's at the peak of her game, and there's nobody in the division that's going to be able to help her. Pretty much because of the fact that when you are fed opponent after opponent to favor Ronda Rousey and getting pay-per-view buys and other things that set the bar so high, all you had to do was pair her up with somebody because Ronda Rousey would do all the work. Now Holly Holm has a lot of work to do. We can't see this humble person trying to sell a fight, or else we're going to see Demetrius Johnson versus 2.0.
Main event,
and
no
nobody
buys.
Cares.
Half a stadium field. That's what we'll see.
That's the thing that the fan side of me is worried about.
Sean, but 56,000 people showed up in the 72,000-seat stadium in Melbourne, Australia.
I'm glad they sold out almost 90% of it, or 80% of it.
Right? I'm good with that. I'm good with that figure. But I also look at the rest of the card, not just the Rousey fight versus Holly Holm and crowning a new women's champion. I look at another fighter that was on that card, another girl fighter that was on that card, co-main event of the evening, which was Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Valerie Letourneau. Valerie Letourneau had a perfect, and I mean perfect, game plan in the first round. But that was in the first round, John. Attack. Push. Go forward. Unlike Ronda Rousey, Joanna Jędrzejczyk did something that a true champion should do. That, my friend, was a simple adjustment in game plan. Game plan A did not go according to plan in the first round. So what did she simply do? She went out of her way to go to game plan B. And game plan B simply was so much better than game plan A. And the dissection of Valerie Letourneau happened right in front of your very own eyes.
And that's a good analogy, because it was a true dissection by Jonah Jacek, or better known to most people now, simply JJ. Because of the fact that in the first round, she was getting beat by Valerie Letourneau. No question asked. Valerie did exactly what I said was going to happen. You have not fought a woman like Valerie Letourneau with that much heart, that much courage to walk through fire to get in and to try to beat up JJ. When you look at JJ, JJ took shot over and over again, but she kept pushing forward because that's the beast that she is. And in that time frame, she broke her head. So that shows how tough Valerie Letourneau is, but also how tough JJ is to continue to push forward in that fight. Okay, Sean, explain this to me, right? You saw JJ and Valerie Letourneau put on a hell of a fight from start to finish. But yet, Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm got the fight of the night. I personally would say the fight of the night, dude, was JJ versus Letourneau.
It was up until the point of when Ronda Rousey got knocked out.
Shock and awe. Unfortunately, when the world champion, the woman that's on the highest pedestal of pedestals, gets knocked off, it is what it is. I would give the fight of the night to Holly Holm just because of that. But, I mean, the card, it is what it is. There wasn't a lot of big things that made headlines or anything like that. I mean, Mark Hunt won with a clip over the top of the ear. And he'll probably get the winner of Matt Mitrone and Ronda Rousey's boyfriend in Travis Hopper Brown. I wonder if he actually likes that, because he probably will never be known as Travis Hopper Brown. He'll be known as Ronda Rousey's boyfriend, Travis Brown, right? And in the blue corner, we have the 6'5", 200 and whatever pounds, Travis Ronda Rousey's boyfriend, Brown. That's what they should say about Brown. But that's where Mark Hunt is at right now. And at his age, 41 years of age, he has to go through one of those two to sniff a title run. Robert Whittaker, one of my handpicked guys that I picked from the beginning, because I can't say that I like Uriah Hall. I keep coming back to the fact that I think this guy is a natural-born gatekeeper, a failed project, a failed prodigy, whatever you want to call him, because he was built up with so much hype coming into the UFC, yet he is so hot and cold, so Jekyll and Hyde when he's in there.
For every time he beats a top guy, he takes two steps backwards in his next fight.
Like, he literally cannot stand there and bang with somebody, and you would think that he would. But again, I call all karate kids babysitters.
It's just like when you go and you play UFC Fight Night or the UFC Fight video game, is that you build your character up, you run through everybody, you get to the title shot, and then what happens in the title shot? You lose. You go back. You beat the rest of them. You go back up, you lose. Rinse and repeat in the UFC video games. That's always what it's been like. Even in the boxing video games, it's the same thing. You beat them, you beat them, you beat them, you move up, and you fight the big guy for the title, and you lose. That's what Uriah Hall does. Works his way up, climbs up the ladder, and gets his opportunity at a big name to play, potentially catapult him into a title shot, and he loses. And rinse and repeat. And rinse and repeat over and over again. At some point, Uriah Hall either A, needs to change camps, or B, figure out what he's doing wrong to get him over that mental barrier. Because either A, it's mental, or B, it's physical. So at some point, he's got to figure out, is it his camp, or is it
the people surround or his mindset with the people around him.
Absolutely. And we will figure out what that is. But Sean, coming up next, right here on the DeCross Brothers, the Sports Warriors, we are joined by the former UFC fighter, Mr. Woo! Himself, Chris Cope, coming up next.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DeCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DeCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody. You are listening to the DeCross Brothers, the Sports Warriors, with your boys, Sean and Tristan DeCross. Today, we had the pleasure, once again, sit down with the man himself, Mr. Woo! Chris Colt, to talk about Ronda Rousey, Bellator, you name it. Shed some light on it. Welcome back, Chris Cope, to the Sports Warriors.
I'm excited. Let's do this thing.
Absolutely. All right, Chris Cope, welcome back to the Sports Warriors. My man, you saw Ronda Rousey get knocked out. You immediately put a video up on your Facebook account. What sparked that?
Well, you know, it's, you know, Ronda Rousey, basically, her whole thing was, she basically, you know, she was training with boxers. So she was training with kickboxers, so she got head kicked, you know. That's the whole thing. And basically, I mean, everyone knows that, you know, they basically kind of sugarcoated. I mean, I think they kind of fed her opponents for a while. I think there's a reason that she wasn't going against Cyborg. And then all of a sudden what happens is she goes against a legit striker and she's, you know, knocked out. And you got to remember, too, this girl, she's won more titles, I think, in boxing than Floyd Mayweather has. She's a legit kickboxer. And she's done a lot of different things. And she's very good at what she does. And not to mention, Rousey, if you saw her that weigh-in, she was very emotional, extremely emotional. Now, on top of that, she's doing movies, she's doing this, she's doing that. And, you know, I feel for her because she was basically single-handedly, you know, carrying the UFC for about, you know, close to a year. Basically, her and McGregor. And she basically went to winning at Holly Holm, and she got caught. Holly Holm's game plan going into it was, you know, she was a tactician. She played to the key. She was evasive. She stopped the takedowns. Nobody's ever been able to stop, you know, Ronda's takedown, because that's her game. She blitzes in with the punches, goes to the takedown, gets you down, then goes kind of for the, you know, submission. And she wasn't able to get Holly Holm down at all and just stuffed it. And that wasn't the best advantage. And once she couldn't take it down, then she's trying to box with her. And you're trying to box with somebody that's, you know, like a 14-time world champion. No, it's not going to happen. And she didn't get knocked out with a punch. She got knocked out with that kick. And that kick I use in sparring all the time. I've knocked a guy out in a fight with it. I've knocked out people in, you know, sparring and training, because it comes up and it creeps up super fast. You know, it's a kick that's utilized in karate a lot. But, you know, she threw it up there, and the timing was just perfect because Ronda's face was down right where it needed to be. And basically the foot collided right where it needed to. And, you know, that was that. I think that Ronda will be back, you know, with a vengeance, but I think she's got to, you know, I think she's got to switch it up. She's got to switch up basically who she's going to for, you know, her striking, because we know that on the ground she's extremely good at what she does. Her judo is extremely good. The only flaw I think Ronda really has is, in a weird way, her ego, and on top of that, you know, her striking. But here's the thing. That rematch, how much money is that rematch going to make you think?
Easily over 1.5 mil, I'm going to say. Easily over that, just because I believe that the fight is going to happen at UFC 200.
Yeah, I mean, and the crazy thing is that this is the first time, that two female fighters were basically the headline. And I think that fight, I think, if I'm mistaken, I think that it actually broke pay-per-view records, or broke attendance or something of that nature.
Yeah, it broke the 22-year history of the UFC in the crowd attendance.
Yeah, which is crazy because it's two female fighters. And Dana, the funniest thing is this. Dana White's on record saying females will never be allowed, you know, in the UFC. And then look at that. You got two of them basically, you know, two of them broke the record, you know, for attendance, and which is insane. I mean, I don't think we're far away from females versus males, you know, in that octagon. I could definitely see, like, can you imagine Holly Holm fighting like Dominic Cruz, or Holly Holm fighting TJ Dillashaw? How crazy that would be, because they're both 135, so it'd be a nice little battle of the sexes.
I would think that Holly Holm would have a better chance at knocking out Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, he's got some crazy footwork, man. He's definitely I used to train with Dominic back in the day in San Diego. He's that kid's a hard worker, man. It's crazy. He used to be in the gym every morning at like 9 a.m. jumping up and down in the ring, saying, yelling he's gonna be the world champion, and everyone would laugh. People would make fun of him over his shadow boxing. And the next thing you know, he's a world champion. Well, when I knew Dominic, he was basically just a poor kid that lived in Hemet. Not poor kid. He's a poor kid out of Yuma, Arizona. And then he basically was just living, breathing, eating out the gym. And then the kid was just determined. It was crazy.
Chris Cope, Sean here. I have a question, though, for you. Is that... This, you brought up two things here so far that I want to get both your sides on. One is that we're hearing people say that this fight was potentially fixed. Then you were also talking about women versus males. And we're not that far off, considering that if you look at wrestling in high school and such, women take on males. Why is it such a different demographic in mixed martial arts compared to, say, wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the fight was thrown, because, I mean, you can clearly see, you know, Ronda's lip was split. You can clearly see, you know, that she was knocked out. But then here's the other weird thing about it. Ronda's got connections with the WWE. She's been involved in wrestling matches. Those guys are extremely good on selling it. You know, they do a little tactic with the razor blade, cutting their eyebrow, you know, this and that. Do I think she cut her lips the razor blade? No. Do I think that she walked into that head kick? No, I don't think she did, but if you want to argue that side, yeah, I mean, a rematch could potentially get her paid, you know, big money. But, yeah, I mean, it was just... If you look at the video after she got knocked out and what she said, and then you see like the TMZ thing of her showing back up at the airport, you know, if it was fixed, I can't really see that happening. But then again, you know, Ronda's tied in with Hollywood, she's tied in with professional wrestling, so she could be very good at, you know, at really selling it. You know what I mean?
Chris Cope here with the DuCross Brothers Sports Warriors. Chris, but if she is good at selling this, then what does that say about the legitimacy of the sport when, once again, you're having people talking up about, well, was this fixed?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, gone are the days where the UFC and everything else was really pure. When you had the UFC, when you had Pride, I mean, that was, in my opinion, you know, the golden era of, you know, of the fighting thing. Because a lot of these guys, very few people were able to, you know, fight full-time and train full-time, except for, like, I think Tito Ortiz and a couple of guys. Most of these guys had jobs on the side. you know, whether they're cops or they're this or they're that. And then all of a sudden, you know, Cheryl Sonnen came around and he started talking some trash. And then people saw how that elevated him, you know, in his career. They saw how it elevated him, you know, with Anderson Silva and everything else. And, you know, now everyone's going to start doing it. You're going to see more and more pushes that way. You're going to see more and more fights. You're going to turn more and more into professional boxing. Because, you know, this is the thing. This is what you have to look at it from a fan's perspective. Not a pure fan, just somebody that is, you know, out there in the general public. And my take is always this. Whether you love somebody or you hate somebody, you're going to watch them. And when you take Ronda Rousey, whether you love her or hate her, you're still going to pay that money to basically watch her fight. What you're not going to pay the money for is if you're indifferent. If you don't care about the person, if there's no emotional connection to that, then, you know, you're not going to pay the money for the pay-per-view. You're taking a fighter like Mike Tyson. You never know what that guy's going to do in the ring. So Mike Tyson can lose 20 fights in a row, but you're still going to pay, you know, you're still going to pay to watch him because he's so damaged and you just don't know what he's going to do next. Now that they're seeing the demographic and they've taken away the sponsors in the UFC, you're going to see a lot more fighters doing this because they know that the only way they're really going to get paid and be marketable is making some controversy. They're creating a fight, building it up. The business model with the UFC and the business model with the WWE, I've said it countless times, it's basically the same. You got Vince McMahon. You got Dana White. You got the, you know, intro music. You got the, and, but here's the thing, which is a little different. They took the sponsorships away, so now all of a sudden things are a little different. They kind of took away the fighter's identity. What you still have, though, is the, you know, the intro music. You still have them, you know, doing the post-fight talks the way they do. And, you know, I really, all I see in the future, I see it getting worse and worse, and I see it just becoming more and more like, you know, the WWE. And it's going to become more and more of a controversy. I mean, we see Conor McGregor. What was Conor McGregor able to do? Conor McGregor basically, he carried the UFC, you know, on his back. I mean, there was two people really carried the UFC on their back, and that was, you know, Ronda Rousey, and that was Conor McGregor. Now Ronda Rousey fell, now it's all Conor. And you watch, it's like when, you know, when Jose Aldo knocks out Conor McGregor on this fight coming up, who's the UFC going to have then? What champ are they going to have that can really talk it up? You take a look at the heavyweight division, you know, I forget his name, the Brazilian, he doesn't really talk it up that much. Then you drop down to 205, you know, Cormier kind of talks it up, but he doesn't have that it factor like a Brock Lesnar or a Ron Rousey or a Conor McGregor. You know, and then you go down to Wyman. Wyman is a freaking amazing, but he doesn't have that it factor persona. He's getting better and better with time. Rockhold, but you see Rockhold's talking this fight up a lot. I mean, they're friends and everything, but he's definitely talking it up. He's trying to make it kind of a grudge match, per se. But Jose Aldo, you know the UFC coming up. Everyone wants to see Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor because there's so much trash being talked, and people love it. They can't get enough of it.
Chris Cope, Sean here. The comparisons that you just talked about with the WWE is so eerily familiar because when you look at UFC, Ronda Rousey is basically the Bella Twins, and then you've got Conor McGregor, basically John Cena.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're right in the sense that you buy pay-per-views and you buy stuff like that because of either the dislike or the love for the individual. That's why Floyd Mayweather did so well in all of his pay-per-view buys compared to Oscar De La Hoya. Because you love to hate the guy, and you wanted to see him get knocked out, or you wanted to see what he was going to do next. Oscar De La Hoya, while he was good in his prime, he never sold that much compared to what Floyd Mayweather did because he didn't talk.
Yeah, yeah, you know, that's the thing is that, you know, in my opinion, you know, you have two people that fight. You have the martial artist, and then you have the prize fighter. And the martial artists, they're the types of individuals. They don't really talk trash. They're very humble. They're very respectful. And whether they're fighting or they're not fighting, they're always training, always working on the craft. Then you have the prize fighter. The prize fighters constantly, you know, they fight for a prize. There's no prize on the line. They're not fighting. They're not doing anything. They're the ones that sell it, though. They're the ones that have the marketability. They're the ones that basically build it up, you know, and take it really to another level. And every so often, you get somebody that kind of embodies both. And in my opinion, that was like GSP, you know. He was able to really boost up and build the fight, but at the same time, he's very humble, very respectful, and he was like an all-around, you know, good guy type of person. But, you know, all these guys, man, I'm telling you, like, literally, UFC has somehow made a way, because all these fighters for a long time were talking about a union and having fighters' rights and, you know, this and that. And the funny thing is, the UFC's found a way to unionize it, but for them, not for the fighters. You know, they basically, they've got all the perks of the NFL, of the NBA, and everything else, but they don't give the players or the fighters, you know, any of those perks, you know, what, you know, whatsoever, except maybe, you know, health insurance. You know, I see Bellator going neck and neck with the UFC in future years. I see Bellator possibly taking it on, which I hope they do.
The Duke Cross Brothers, the Sports Warriors here with Chris Cope, Tristan here. Chris, you just brought up Bellator, and you just said that you could see the UFC potentially getting worse down the road here with the way that their fighters are going, especially if Conor McGregor loses to Jose Aldo, the slide can continue. But Bellator has now announced that you're going to have Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie 3, and you're going to have a sideshow in Dada 5000 versus Kimbo Slice. How is that good for the sport?
Yeah, I mean, that's completely like circus act stuff. And look, here's the thing, that which, you know, Scott Coker doing that, I don't really know what he's trying to accomplish by that. But, you know, the Ken Shamrock and the Royce Gracie, I can kind of see, because, you know, that was a fight that really was the first kind of thing a long time ago, and this would be, I guess, the third fight, I think. And, you know, that could kind of possibly, you know, make sense. Would you ever see that fight in the UFC? Absolutely not. And that makes, in my opinion, that kind of lowers the stock in Bellator. And the Dada 3000 or whatever, and the Kimbo Slice, I mean, that's just ridiculous, flat out. That's kind of making the sport in almost, you know, a kind of sideshow type of deal. But then again, you take a look at Pride. What was Pride notorious for? The sideshow thing. You know what I mean? They're notorious for putting Fedor against the ginormous slouches that Fedor would just knock out. But it looked crazy to the person that was uneducated because, you know, he's basically knocking out a giant. Where anybody with any kind of like natural skill would, you know, knock him out. But the one thing that fighters will have in Bellator is, you know, job security. And they will have, you know, feel more comfortable, I think, with it. You're starting to see guys leave the UFC and go into Bellator with, I don't know whether or not Josh Thompson was released. I mean, that's still kind of, you know, iffy. But he went over there. Phil Davis was still kind of in his prime. He went over to Bellator. I think you're going to see that more and more because fighting for the UFC is just going to be kind of too high pressure type of thing. It's going to be the type of deal where People are so afraid of, you know, possibly being cut that they're just going to go with Bellator and, you know, make it kind of a safe bet. That's why, like, managers are so important because they kind of construct and guide your career for you. But the UFC's ideal game plan, I think, in the near future is to somehow eradicate, you know, managers, which basically I think they're going to do because what's the reason to even have a manager once you're in the UFC? Because sponsorships, they're basically ruled out. And picking the fight, you don't really have an option there. It's like Joe Silva's going to call you up going, hey, I've got so-and-so. You want it? You're basically going to have to say yes, because you say no, like, they're probably just going to be like, oh, looks like we're going to have to cut this guy. They've got no shortage of fighters, you know, absolutely, you know, not. So it just comes down to, you know, what exactly, you know, guys are willing to do. And it's just going to get more and more ridiculous. And you got to train the slaves, like, flat out. It's almost like, you know, Dana White's sitting in his throne, and he's like Caesar, and you got freaking these people fighting to death, you know, and he's just plotting and clapping and everything else. And then that's the thing that's tragic about Ronda, is that nobody knows what goes through your head, and nobody knows about what you have to do in there unless you've experienced it. Nobody knows those butterflies and the nerves and getting your hands wrapped. And then all of a sudden you walk out and you walk into a stadium so damn big that you're like blown away. And then all of a sudden there's this basic cage and another person staying away from you. And then that person has got nothing to lose, everything to gain. And then if you're the champion, like, you know, Ronda, how she's just unstoppable for so many years, she's got everything to lose, nothing to gain. And that's a lot of stress to put on someone. Not to mention Ronda's got a movie career. Ronda's got, you know, this, that. And in my opinion, she kind of just spread herself too thin. But what I tell everybody is this: nobody likes the champion that never loses. Like, Mayweather's like cool and all, but he never lost. What people like the comeback. People like going, somebody like hitting rock bottom and coming back and making a name for himself. And like, you know, the Rocky story. So if Ronda comes back from this, and if Ronda's stronger than ever, and she comes back, she beats Holly Holm, that's going to make Ronda's stock drastically increase.
So, Chris Cope, Sean here. One last question here before we go ahead and let you go is that one of the hot topics that we had was that people were saying that without Ronda Rousey, there wouldn't be a women's MMA division, and they paid her as kind of the pioneer. Is that safe to say, or does that take the stock away from the women that have paved the way for her, like a Gina Carano?
Give me a break, man. Gina Carano. Gina Carano was the first one, you know, with, you know, Strikeforce, and she was the first one that really had that, you know, that it factor per se. And then she lost to Cyborg. And then it was like kind of Cyborg. But Gina Carano was that first pretty face, you know, in women's MMA. She was the reason that a lot of women wanted to start doing MMA. If anyone's, you know, paving, and I think Ronda even said it, you know, thank you for Gina Carano for paving the way. Because, like, you know, in all honesty, who came before Gina Carano?
The Aaron Tohill, Michelle Olds.
Now, that, I don't know who they are, but the thing is, what I do remember is, you know, Gina Carano, I just remember her being just the big thing of women's MMA, and that chick was, you know, Ronda, in my opinion, Ronda sometimes can be, and I don't know Ronda, so I can't make this judgment, but she can sometimes be a little too blunt, a little too honest, and it almost kind of could possibly repel the, you know, empowers women, but possibly can, repel guys. But Gina Carano, man. That chick was sexy. Like, that chick, you know, she weighed in, and you're like, jaw dropped. You're like, Jesus, this chick is like, she just had that real sexy factor to her. And she was real humble and shy, and, you know, this and that. And that's what I think got a lot of people, you know, really going about the whole thing. You know, Ronda was kind of like I think, and this is the reason why I think Ronda got so popular. She had that bad girl type of thing to her. Even though she wasn't all tatted up and everything else, she really significantly talked trash, and nobody else really did that. And she was flat out telling, you know, people what she was going to do to them. And that's why I think Dana White and those guys liked her, because Dana White says she is, Ronda Rousey's the most mentally strong person that I've ever met. Like, she just flat out goes out there and says exactly what she's going to do. And the people that do that and do it, you know, are famous in our society. You got Babe Ruth, you know, pointing at the left field fence, saying to hit over there, or right field fence, whatever. Pointing a shot, he hits home front. You got fighters that predict exactly what round they're going to do it. That's what made Conor McGregor so crazy, because the guy was almost like Nostradamus. He's basically saying exactly what round was going to happen, how he was going to do it, and then it happened. There's a lot of power in that.
Absolutely. Chris Cope, thank you for joining the Sports Warriors. Always a pleasure talking to you.
Good deal, guys. Thanks for having me, all right?
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
See, everybody, you're listening to the Ducrosse Brothers, the Sports Warriors. Sean and Tristan Ducrosse right here. See, make no mistake about it. Only here on the Sports Warriors can you get guests like Chris Cope to shed light on subjects that others are mostly afraid of. That's why, cross the line. Go ahead. Do it. out to Chris Cope. We'll be right back after this break. You are listening to the DuCrosse Brothers, Sports Warriors. Up next, we have our Bellator 146 preview.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCrosse Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCrosse Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
Alright, everybody, you are listening to the DuCrosse Brothers Sports Warriors with your boys, Sean and Tristan DuCrosse. Sean, incredible weekend of MMA, and it's going to be no different as Bellator 146 is coming up around the corner. But yet, it's back to reality for Bellator. Not this sideshow stuff, not about these legends versus legends. We are literally going back to the grassroots, so to speak. As Bellator 146's card, once again, stacks up rather nicely against a UFC card. Chris Cove said it, that Bellator, despite their sideshow and their circus, when they put on their actual shows, it could be coming for the UFC sooner rather than later. 146, okay. You have Melvin Manoff versus Hisaki Kato. That's going to be the main focus on this card. And Hisaki Kato is the one that did that crazy Superman punch out of nowhere to Joe Schilling. And that's all she wrote. You look at this card, and you look at across the pond, if you will, UFC Fight Night 78, that's coming up also this weekend. World Series of Fighting 25 coming up this weekend. You're looking at potentially watching that UFC may be third on the spectrum this weekend in terms of ratings. Absolutely. You saw Bellator beat them in the ratings last month, like 2 weeks ago. Now you're looking at this again. This Bellator card alone stacks up better than UFC Fight Night 78 that we'll get to shortly. So when you look at it, what I find interesting is that Hisaki Kato is taking on Melvin Manoff. Kato is 5-1. We'll always remember what he said to Joe Schilling. I'm going to be the giant killer. I'm a small glove fighter. You're a big glove fighter. Melvin Manoff has that same history that Joe Schilling has. He's a Dutch kickboxer. He either gets KOs or he gets KO'd. There's no in-between. There's no gray area here. And the fact that he lost his last two fights by KO, by being knocked out, isn't something to take lightly either. Because, I mean, dude, his knockouts to Joe Schilling and Alexander Shevchenko were crazy knockouts in itself. Yes, Alexander Shevchenko's was reversed to a no contest, but that's only on paper. Only on paper. Not in reality of what happened. But Melvin did do something good, and I'm going to applaud him for that. Is that he took 6 months off to heal his body from training. He did not train after he lost his last fight against Alexander Shevchenko. He took the time to get healthy. He's 39 years old with two of the gruesomest knockouts you'll see of his career in Bellator.
is now training with Alexander Gustafsson in Sweden. Does that make a difference here? 6 months off to get his body healthy and his mind right? And then change his camp and go to Sweden to train with Alexander Gustafsson? When you're going to train with Alexander Gustafsson, who is a really good striker, how does that really improve your game when you're one of the top strikers in MMA already? Because Alexander Gustafsson is not going to be the one to teach you how to defend off the ground. Alexander Gustafsson is not going to be the one to teach you how to take a punch better than what you do. So I guess it remains to be seen about what Alexander Gustafsson can teach him. So then the way that I see this, Sean, the way that I fully understand how this fight's going to go is that Melvin Manoff ultimately, Sean, is going to have to kind of watch the videotape of Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm and think about the longevity of his health, because, Sean, I believe that right now he's going to have to go in there like Holly Holm and go, you know what? I'm not going to go crazy. Don't get reckless. And just start swinging all over the place. You're going to get caught. That's the reality of the situation. Like you said, you're either going to get the KO or you're going to get knocked out. It's simple as that. Either way, this is going to be, if you're a fan of mixed martial arts and you're a fan of the stand-up game, this is going to be one of those that you don't want to miss. There's going to be a highlight regardless of the outcome. Regardless if Cato walks out as the victor or Melvin Manoff walks out the victor. This one will have KO of the night written all over it, just like it did against Joe Schilly. Somebody's going to the mat. How? Remains to be seen. That's one other thing that I see on another fight, Sean, is Bubba Jenkins versus Jordan Parsons, okay? There is nobody right now in mixed martial arts that is a better wrestler, hands down, than Bubba Jenkins, who's now apparently managing himself, right? But how scary is that? Out of the entire world of combat sports, Bubba Jenkins is probably the best wrestler out there. And that's the thing that I have here going into this fight, is that Jordan Parsons showed his ability to fight on the ground and defend off his back, and then ultimately win a round by submission. He's one of the guys that Neil Melanson trained. He was very promising in his fight when we saw him fight for Bellator, I believe here in San Diego. When you look at this, Bubba Jenkins, like, you're right, world-class wrestler. Is it going to be a boring fight? Is he going to sit there and smother Jordan Parsons and grind out a slow win? Or is he going to go in there and put on a show for the fans? That's what you have to worry about with Bubba Jenkins. If Bubba Jenkins doesn't get past Jordan Parsons and Parsons wins, Jordan Parsons' stock level goes up just that much higher because of who Bubba Jenkins is and has a chance of becoming. See, and that's the thing, Sean. We have met a kid named Jules Bias, amateur fighter out here, called a Giant Slayer, facing a guy named Joseph Williams at Epic Fighting in January, tentatively. I see a little bit of comparisons between Bubba Jenkins and Jordan Parsons in that fight alone, because when I look at Jordan Parsons, I see Jordan Parsons, here's a top prospect kid, a top kid for a while, until he got annihilated by a black zillion. Takes on a hype man that was so built up in the UFC that, oh, he's 30-0. Remember that guy? Julio Cesar Nieves Jr.? Oh, my God, he's 30-0. What did he do back in May? He stopped. Okay? Bubba Jenkins. Bellator. All this hype around Bubba Jenkins about him being that next guy. Building up this star power. Jordan Parsons does not want the same thing that happened in 71 seconds against a black zillion when he first was coming up and all of his hype was just stopped in 71 seconds. I see a different Parsons coming into this fight. I think that he's worked on his defense. He's established and maintained control of wrestlers in the past. I'm just worried that is the skill level of Bubba Jenkins too much for Jordan Parsons to overcome? Or can Parsons simply put another guy that they are giving him very little shot to beat on his back and his hand raised victorious? I don't know, because that goes almost hand-in-hand with the Brandon Gertz versus Derek Campos. Because of the fact that Brandon Gertz showed the world what a great wrestler he was and the ability to systematically dissect Melvin Gillard with just pure wrestling. You're talking about, can Jordan Parsons overcome Bubba Jenkins wrestling? Well, can Derek Campos do the same thing against the beast of a Brandon Gertz, who seemingly right now is trending upward? And please, just give him his penne sandwich next time. That's all I'm saying. You don't want to make a hungry fighter even that much more mad. Just give him his food, pat him on the back, and get him out there. Because any individual standing in front of him is going to be face first on the mat. See Melvin Gillard. Just make him happy. But you're talking about who's on this card. You also got the new kid. I'm going to try to pronounce it correctly. If I pronounce it wrong, I'm sorry. But Chidi Nokawadi versus Ricky Rainey. That's a fight that's interesting to myself, is because Nakoni, his brother, has struggled mightily, just like he has, to transition with the ability of defending takedowns. But see, that's the thing, is that when you're a Muay Thai fighter, Sean, a Muay Thai practitioner, sometimes it takes you a little bit longer to develop. And Chidi coming over, this is his first fight in MMA. His first fight in Bellator, making his debut. Chidi, he has a very good shot at stopping Ricky Rainey, because Ricky Rainey's a stand-up guy. But Ricky Rainey has shown the ability to be able to get the fight to the ground. So Ricky Rainey's not going to stand there with a guy who's really, really, really good at stand-up when he has an opportunity to take him down to the mat. And I think that's what you're going to see with Ricky Rainey. But you're talking about heavy hitters. That's what this card has. Houston Alexander makes his return against Guillaum Baena. So you look at those two. I mean, dude, that's going to be a stand-and-bang contest and a half. Sean, what about Julia Budd making her return? I almost wanted to say Roberto, because her name is Roberta. So we might have to call Roberto a fight book. Roberta, just saying. Roberta Pam Roval is who Julia Budd is fighting. And Budd, it's been all around. It's public knowledge. Julia Budd has had issues in the past with other organizations, especially in Vika, not being able to get fights. Here she has a fight, but it's interesting because here she's in a featherweight division and she's going to, I almost want to say that it's almost like a tournament kind of base, because the winner of this fight could compete for the newly created women's featherweight title in 2016, Sean. So when you see this, Julia Budd, she's a fast rising star that's facing one too. She is back on the hunt to get back in the title picture. And this is a great way to do that. Bellator 146. It's going down. Like you said, heavy hitters, miss it. Believe it. And Sean, coming up right after this last break before we get off the air, the Sports Warriors are here with Sean and Tristan Cross. The storm is coming. In the middleweight division of boxing, for the first time, we have a vacant middleweight title. Only one man can leave with that title, and the other can't. And so much more news coming up right after this brief message.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper,
Up, Up, and Away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducrosse Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducrosse Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening live to the Ducrosse Brothers, the Sports Warriors. Yep. With your boys, as always, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse. The really only new lively sports combat talk show that's out there on the airwaves. You only get the reality of the situation here. And we're going to continue to pay that way. As Sean, breaking news today was that Miguel Cotto and Canelo Alvarez has signed on the dotted line. But once again, we run into an issue with the WBC pretty much just saying, my balls are bigger than yours. And I say that for the simple fact that they demanded Miguel Cotto and Canelo Alvarez to fork over $300,000 to sanction their fight.
And Canelo did that without any hesitation. Here you go.
And then they asked for more money, $25,000 from Golden Boy Promotions and Rock Nation. And again, Golden Boy, Canelo Alvarez did not bat an eyelash. Miguel Cotto? Dude, nah, I'm good. You can take the title. I'm going to keep the money.
And that's the thing that's been, that's always been the downfall of Miguel Cotto, is the fact is that he's always been about the money. That's why he fights at catchweights, is because he's about the money. He's not about the titles per se.
He's not, like I told you, he was a fake middleweight.
And when you look at it, he's exactly that now. He's fighting Canelo Alvarez without the WBC title on the line. The only titles that are on the line are the Ring title, the Ring Magazine title, as well as the Linear Championship.
Correct. And that title was taken off of Miguel Cotto.
WBC was.
Miguel Cotto can no longer win a title.
He can't win the WBC title. Miguel Cotto, if he wants to, he can take the Lineal and the Ring Magazine title. He just cannot win the WBC title. If he wins the fight, Miguel Cotto, the WBC middleweight title will be vacated. The only person that can win the WBC middleweight title is that of Canelo Alvarez. What's the point of being a middle heavyweight if you can't hold on to one of the middle heavyweight titles? What's the point of winning the fight if you can't do it? He turns around and tells Oscar De La Hoya, why don't you pay my fees?
Why don't you stay out of my business? It's not like I'm in yours.
It's like, and then he takes a pot shot at the WBC saying, the WBC's problem is that they want four champions in one weight division. More catch weights.
And see, and I get where that's a problem. But dude, you're part of the problem with that. Because all you want to do is fight at catch weights. If you would fight at your normal super middleweight weight class, we wouldn't even be talking about this.
Or if you're just willing to recognize
that, are you a middleweight?
That if you want to be classified as a middleweight, show up at middleweight.
Right.
Or else we wouldn't be in this situation. But it's like, does it really matter, though, that the WBC is not on the line? Yeah, it matters because, well, the Lineal title, the Ring Magazine title, the WBC title, those should all be coexist. They should all mesh together at some point. So when you're looking at this, you want to win something from each party, essentially, because you're there unifying all these titles. So I can see where Oscar De La Hoya is mad at Miguel Cotto for allowing this to happen. But at the same time, the WBC should have stepped in and made sure this didn't happen for the good of the boxing instead of stripping the title away
from him. Because according to Miguel Cotto, is that the WBC's, all their mistakes that they do, they try to regain it and capture and steal money. Yes, steal money from the fighters.
That's Miguel Cotto again trying to hold his money hostage.
Right.
There was years ago, like the last time we talked about it, was the fact that Miguel Cotto isn't the first time that he sat there and avoided a fight because of money. It's not the first time. And apparently it's not going to be the last time that he tries to avoid a fight because of money. If this guy wants to make money, he's got to show up to fight and to make sure everything is dotted and everything is signed correctly and accordingly and not avoiding it at all costs because you want to pay a few bucks. At the end of the day, you're going to get the $250,000 or the $300,000 back by the pay-per-view buys and what your purse is going to be at the end of the day. Because you know you're going to clear about $1 million. So you know you're going to make it out of this with bank.
Right?
So man up, pay the fines. But now the title has been stripped. That's not fair. That's not fair for Canelo Alvarez, who wanted to take that title from Miguel Cotto.
And as far as I know, he can. At the end, if he wins, he gets that title.
But he didn't take it essentially from him.
No.
It's been
still
vacated.
Still, it doesn't matter.
I want to beat the guy in front of me to take the title.
Well, apparently that doesn't matter either to Jay-Z or Oscar De La Hoya, as apparently they have a $100,000 bet on this fight for their guys. Oscar De La Hoya, $100,000 on the table for Canelo Alvarez. Jay-Z says, okay, I got you. Miguel Cotto, $100,000. Are we going to talk about this fight being fixed when both promoters have money on this fight?
I didn't know you were allowed to do that.
Right? That's like Pete Rose gambling and betting on the Reds. And yet he's blackballed from the Hall of Fame. You have two promoters betting on their own fighters?
It's like watching the White Sox era with Shoeless Joe Jackson. Let's just go down those roads all over again. Fixing games. Fixing fights now, apparently. That's what this world's come to.
Boy, Mayweather always had his special referee.
Allegedly.
So it just... the world of combat sports, don't you just love it?
Speaking about favoritism, here as we go out, you begin to wonder if there's favoritism. When you look over the fact that Kevin Gastelum will take on Neil Magny, and UFC went out of their way to hire him a nutritionist just to make sure he makes his middleweight make his welterweight return instead of his middleweight.
This is a guy that missed weight twice at 170.
Why
and
would you
gonna bring him back?
Why would you allow him to drop down from middleweight to welterweight? He barely made middleweight.
He missed it last time by 10 pounds.
You know everybody's going to be all eyes on deck for this one to see what he steps on the scale at on Friday to find out what his welterweight number is. Did he make weight or did he miss weight? Did the nutritionist help or not?
Okay, we'll talk about weight cutting. What about Diego Sanchez again dropping to another weight class?
Keep dropping, keep dropping. If you can't make it high, keep dropping. At one point, this guy was a middleweight.
Dude, this Diego Sanchez is going to look like Matthew McConaughey in that drugged-up cancer movie. Dude, he's going to look, or was that Christian Bale? Maybe it was Christian Bale.
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale. He's going to look like a toothpick by the end of his career. I swear, at some point, he's going to fight at bantamweight. Heck, he may even go down to flyweight and take on Demetrius Johnson.
But you got to wonder how much of his body is getting eaten up by this.
Right? But he's missed 30 shows, Sean, since his controversial win over Ross Pearson at UFC Fight Night 42. This guy keeps dropping weight to kind of rejuvenate his career. And now he's going to take on Ricardo Lamas?
Ricardo Lamas is an interesting one because he lost to Chad Mendes via KO, where previously he won his last six of his last eight fights. But this is going to be an interesting fight because it could go one of two ways. Either A, it's going to be like watching Diego Sanchez versus Ross Pearson, or like Diego Sanchez on top of the table with Donald Cerrone chanting yes, or we're going to see him versus Gilbert Melendez versus Sanchez version 2.0. Because both these guys are sluggers. They both stand in the pocket. They both swing for the fences. So this could be a fight of the night, or it could go absolutely horrific.
Yeah, but one of these guys at this juncture, Sean, is going to eventually get a title shot. So if Diego Sanchez wins against Ricardo Lamas, he might be very much into that title shot contention already if he gets through Ricardo Lamas. And how sad is that?
That won't happen. Diego Sanchez is not going to – if he gets past him, he ain't getting the title shot right now. He maybe has two more fights to see if he gets a title shot. But Ricardo Lamas, it also goes to show how weak the featherweight division is when Ricardo Lamas is still ranked in the top five. He's a good fighter, but he's not top five right now. More like top
10-ish.
So that's where this UFC Fight Night 78 card is. It's got a lot of question marks, a lot of what ifs. You want to tell me that's going to be better than Bellator 146 or World Series of Fighting that's going to see an eight-man fight tournament as well Saturday night? Come on. World Series of Fighting is doing big things with a one-night tournament with eight fighters in the lightweight division.
Yeah, I'll be watching that.
I'll be watching that to see how in God's earth does Luis Palmino and Brian Foster make it out of the same bracket alive.
I wonder if we're going to see history in the making that both those guys do not make it out of that tournament.
That's what I said. You can talk to me, dude. I've been on this forum called the MMA Fight Community. These guys are legit. You want to talk MMA with us, the DeCross Brothers, the Sports Warriors? Head on over there. But that's what I said.
The MMA community?
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I said was that when you look at the World Series of Fighting, is that I said that. One of those two guys are not going to make it, but don't be surprised if either one of them makes it out that they don't call on the alternate because of the fact that those two guys put on a fight. Those two guys slug it out. The only guy that's going to be relatively fresh-ish is the guys that come off on the right side of the bracket. I'm still saying that at the end of the day, if Brian Foster can make it out alive, it's going to be Brian Foster versus Mike Ricci. See, that's the one matchup.
Out of this eight-man fight tournament, that's the one matchup I really want to see. Foster Ricci. Hands down, without a doubt, that's the fight I wanted to see. It's true. We are the Sports Warriors, Sean and Tristan Newcross. You can catch us on Facebook. Just search us, Sean and Tristan Newcross. Like our page, the Newcross Bros. Show some love on our website at www.thehotspotshow.com where you can get our latest interviews, our YouTube videos, you name it, all on there. Hit us up on Twitter at the DeCross Bros. If you want to talk MMA too, like my brother said, head over to www.mmacommunity.com and you can get in onto the MMA combat forums over there and talk with the sports wards. Till next time, we are out.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Newcross.